Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Matt Smith. He is a partner at Good Soil Management together with Emmett Peppers. And I've had him on my show before. We're going to talk about Tesla's Q4 delivery numbers, the impact on Tesla's Q4 earnings in 2022. Matt, I want to welcome you back on the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, great to be here. Doing really well. Great numbers from Tesla, obviously. So that was a great way to start off the new year. But yeah, things are going well.
So I wanted to ask you about the Q4 numbers. Were you shocked at all by the delivery numbers of 308,600?
Yeah, I think I was definitely shocked. I mean, I try to be very middle of the road with all the analysis that I do. You know, I don't want to be always optimistic and then, you know, kind of be slightly disappointed every quarter. So I was kind of thinking, you know, analysts were too low. Wall Street analysts were probably too low, but I was thinking maybe like 285, 290, something like that. So for them to come in and, you know, post over 300,000, like well over 300,000 was just a big shock to me. And kind of forced me to reevaluate what I was expecting for Q4 and then beyond. And I think that's what you're seeing kind of across the board, analysts scrambling to make sense of how to interpret these numbers and how to reevaluate going forward, you know, what the implications are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting. They haven't really revised numbers that much yet. It feels like because there's, you know, a little bit uncertainty with the exact numbers, you know, maybe they're going to wait a little bit for earnings. But then the thing is, if the price continues to go up before that, I think it might force the analysts to kind of upgrade beforehand or else they might not look good, you know, because the price is like way up there, you know. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I do think the operations of the company are kind of forcing analysts' hands here with some of these revisions that they need to make. I mean, if you were modeling 260,000, like a lot of these analysts were, and then there's like a, you know, almost 50,000 unit beat, I mean, that has pretty big implications for revenue. I mean, you don't want to be off by like multiple billions of revenue on your revenue forecast for a single quarter. Which is, I think, the position a lot of these analysts are going to be in. And then on top of that, you start thinking of some of the compounding effects. So if you do have that many more deliveries, there's a high probability that your margins are going to be increasing as well, just due to, you know, higher fixed cost absorption out of the factories and you know, some other just kind of variables like that, that, you know, I think it causes more good news. Like the good news of deliveries causes more good news for margins and for, you know, earnings per share and everything like that. So I think if they wait longer, it's going to be harder to kind of play catch up to the operations.
Yeah. When I messaged you about coming on and asked you about Q4, you're saying the implications are kind of nuts. And I think that like is a great summary. I'm going to put that on the thumbnail. But yeah, I think for a lot of people, you know, who aren't following Tesla with the minute details of like the numbers and the spreadsheets, all that, I think it could be hard to understand the implications of what a 40,000, you know, vehicle beat means. But I mean, let's maybe discuss it, and I want to hear your take. When you look at the numbers, 40,000 vehicles is, you know, let's say ASP, average sales price of 50,000 or so, that's basically $2 billion of extra revenue that wasn't expected, right?
Right.
And then, you know, take 30% of gross profit of that. So you're looking at, you know, almost what, 650, almost 700,000 of $700 million of extra gross profit. But that will typically go to, you know, the bottom line, because your operating expenses don't increase whether or not you do you know, 270 or 310. So that extra margin, that extra revenue, that of the margin that you're getting of that goes basically directly to profit. So you're looking at, you know, probably extra profits of, you know, I don't know, 700 million or so. Is that how you're viewing it, kind of? And then the second thing is, now analysts or people have to readjust their expectations for next quarter and 2022, because they didn't expect Tesla to reach this type of production run rate. So everything gets boosted up, you know, like for every quarter. And then you have to basically readjust your whole earnings for the whole year and years out forward. What are you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, your numbers are pretty close to what I was thinking, actually. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Em and I, we do this, you know, weekly live stream, and we ran through my model. And at the time, I don't remember the exact numbers we had, but it was somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, deliveries of 270, 275,000 or so, and kind of moderate assumptions on, a little bit more kind of gross margin growth and that sort of thing. And I was coming up with, earnings per share of around adjusted earnings per share around $2.20. But after this beat, I had to kind of go back through, like you're saying, and add all that extra revenue in, and most of it drops to the bottom line. And so as I went through that exercise, I was finding around 70 cents or so of 75 cents, I think, of incremental upside. So yeah, most of that, which equates, with the number of shares outstanding, that's about $750 million of incremental earnings. Like, so yeah, your math kind of pencils out. Now there, you have to tax effect that a little bit. But on the flip side, there's also, it's higher margin than the rest of your, earnings because, or of your deliveries because of the higher fixed cost absorption, like we were saying. So, there's more kind
exactly.
of incremental upside for every unit that you go above, say 270 or whatever your target number is. If you go beyond that, those units are higher margin.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is that, yeah, the margins, are just because your fixed costs are there. And so you're just squeezing more cars out of this relatively the same fixed cost. You're not hiring, a bunch of extra people that quarter, per se.
Right.
So your margins go up. I have you in your estimates predicting or estimating Tesla to have over 30% gross margin without, or auto gross margin without regulatory credits. When I think about that, I'm thinking, wow, man, I think the analysts are going to be pretty happy with that. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it is remarkable. I mean, I remember 2 years ago when Elon Musk, I think it was probably 3 years ago, Elon was saying how, they want to kind of leapfrog the automotive industry in terms of, kind of the profitability of their manufacturing operations. Mm-hmm. And like, nobody believed them whatsoever at that time. I remember actually one of the analysts said, oh, so you want to try to, implement Toyota production system at Tesla. And like, I remember distinctly Elon laughed at that question and said, no, like we want to do better. And everybody thought that was a joke. And now here they are. I even didn't really think that was that likely. I thought maybe they can get close to, I don't know, like 20% gross margins, but then they can reach 30% by selling software on top of that. So like full self-driving. But what they've done instead is like you've seen the full self-driving take rates actually decreased over time, which kind of hurts their margins, their gross margins. Yet despite that fact, and despite lowering ASPs, their manufacturing excellence has just propelled them to these crazy like 30% gross margins. So that to me is just incredibly optimistic about just their core manufacturing operations are so profitable that they can produce these types of margins, and then you still have this optionality of full self-driving take rates increasing and down the road, and even just the fact that it'll be 100% recognizable at some point down the road too. That'll help a lot with margins as well. So, yeah, there's just so much upside, and I think you're getting to a point now where you start looking at forward, earnings per share, and like you have to assume either just like ridiculously low earnings per share going forward, or a drastically compressing PE multiple in order to basically say that Tesla share price should stay where it is or decrease. Yeah. So that's where, when I start trying to come up with reasonable estimates for 2022, there's very like middle of the road paths, I think, where you have Tesla getting to $1,500, $1,700, $2,000 per share by the end of the year, depending on how they kind of pan out with posting operations and or posting earnings going forward and how deliveries ramp and that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember the big critique, was it like a year ago or 2 years ago? People were saying that Tesla could never become profitable without regulatory credits. Like regulatory credits was propping up the whole entity, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, that was like a year ago. Like it was.
Yeah, exactly. And here we have, Tesla, probably, going to deliver, 30% auto gross margins without regulatory credits. I mean, that's crazy. Delivering, probably GAAP. I mean, when I'm looking at your numbers, I'm looking at about 3.3 billion non-GAAP around that. I'm around the same number when I look at my figure. So 3.3, I'm looking at 3.2 to 3.4 non-GAAP billions, obviously. That's like a $13 billion annualized, run rate. And yeah, it's like Tesla's becoming super profitable, and the regulatory credits are like just like a drop in the bucket. They're almost nothing, you know, at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Somebody posted on Twitter recently. I don't remember who it was, but that if you look at like the analyst consensus estimates of earnings, like, you know, just how many billions of dollars of earnings are expected for Q4 of 2021, I believe at the time Tesla's expected Q4 earnings are actually going to be higher than Amazon's analyst consensus earnings, which is kind of crazy to think that they've arrived at that sort of scale with less than 1 million vehicles delivered to be able to post earnings that are like comparable to Amazon in a given quarter. Mm-hmm. And then so if you start thinking about, okay, well, Amazon's I think they're like a $1.7 trillion valuation right now, market cap. Yeah. But like Tesla should clearly have a higher PE ratio than Amazon, because, you know, they're growing at a much higher rate than Amazon is right now. So like the implications of that one comparable company and say, okay, well, like at a similar level of earnings, Tesla should certainly have a higher, you know, PE ratio. So that would imply to Tesla, you know, if you just want to go off that one comp, should have a, you know, something higher than, say, you know, a $1.7 trillion market cap. Which is kind of crazy, but that's just like,
yeah,
you know, you don't need crazy assumptions now to get to crazy kind of conclusions on where the like share price should go from here, just based on the operations of the company.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great analogy. So let's look at Amazon, $110 billion in profit, and then let's look at their net income. Yeah, it was $3.15 billion. Yeah, last quarter. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's fascinating. Tesla's growing up a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's just one of those, you know, I don't follow Amazon too closely. So when I heard that they were just in the same ballpark as Amazon, it's like, yeah, whoa, really? Yeah. That's surprising. And so to do it on such a small revenue base is pretty astonishing.
Yeah, crazy. I'm curious, what do you think? Is this sustainable? I mean, let's take the other side or explore that. So some people would say, hey, there's been this huge, you know, tailwind where you have new car prices, used car prices just skyrocketing across the whole industry. And so Tesla has been able to increase their prices, you know, let's say $5,000 or $10,000. And they're benefiting from that price increase with their margins and demand. But what happens when new car prices and used car prices go back to the mean and Tesla has to reduce their prices, let's say significantly, does that hurt their margins? And all this optimism and exuberance that people are feeling toward, you know, oh, Tesla's, you know, margins are crazy, all this stuff. What if that is now in reverse, you know, in a few quarters, mm-hmm. where people are like, oh, they're shrinking margins for Tesla, and Tesla valuation gets hit. Is that a realistic possibility, or how are you kind of viewing kind of this whole new used car market and the impact on Tesla?
So I would say that was kind of my mindset maybe 6 months ago, was, you know, Tesla's going to have to, in my modeling, actually, I was assuming, I think, 5% across the board price decreases each year with some amount of kind of gross margin hit coming from that. So, you know, the idea being, if you're going to expand, you know, your deliveries by 50% per year and ultimately reach, you know, 20 million vehicles, of course, you're going to have to lower price points. And so I think generally speaking, that's still a fair assessment that, you know, if you really want to go from like 1 million to 20 million, your ASP is going to come down within that time frame. So I think, mm-hmm. you know, in the broad strokes of like a long time frame, I think that's a reasonable critique. But in the short term, I think if you look at how long the lead times are for new Tesla vehicles, if you look at the kind of strength of, you know, residual prices for Tesla, and then if you think about, I think it's Q2 of this year, of 2022, you're going to have vehicles, the original Model 3s coming off lease that Tesla's going to own and be able to resell, you know, at higher margins that like they've never seen before. I mean, that's another kind of catalyst that I think a lot of people are not really thinking about, the fact that you're going to have this kind of new influx of, you know, vehicles that Tesla can can essentially resell in an environment where used car prices are so resilient. And then I think the other thing to keep in mind is that as ICE sales kind of peter out and more people convert to EVs, even if overall prices for vehicles do fall, I think it stands to reason that EV sales will or pricing will be hurt less, and possibly they'll even be able to weather that storm altogether, just because of that transition will bias demand towards EVs so much so that you don't necessarily have to cut prices too much to meet a given level of demand. So it's possible that prices could decrease, in I don't know, the 1-2 year time frame, maybe even beyond. But I think for the time being, like for the foreseeable future, Tesla has all the demand they can have. And the metric I'd be watching to keep track of this is, what are the lead time for new deliveries? And if those start to compress, then I'd say, okay, yeah, there's pricing pressure could be expected. But we haven't seen that.
It's interesting because, on one side, there's this argument that, there's this temporary boost to Tesla's margins and demand because the whole industry is like going crazy with lack of supply. But on the flip side, you have this idea that maybe there is some type of like crazy, profound, fundamental shift going on where maybe demand for EVs, but especially for Teslas, are growing potentially much faster than the production rate. You know what I'm saying? Like up until this point in Tesla's history, the kind of demand and production were kind of like, step lock, just step by step and step. But there's also this possibility. It's like this perfect storm in a good way where could it be where there's this some type of inflection point where the demand just starts taking off much faster than what Tesla can keep up with, and other OEMs, they can't scale as fast, and then let's say they have battery supply issues, and second, they don't have desirable products, and so, it goes to Tesla, and then yeah, there's definitely a bull case where Tesla's not just pricing but margins can just continue to grow, especially when you add in the whole new factories, right, and the new efficiencies, the 4680 cells, and then as you mentioned, the full self-driving. That's a whole option call in a sense. Like if it works out, that's just extra pure margin. So definitely a lot of interesting things going on for sure.
I think back a lot to a tweet Brett Winton from ARK Invest put out, like I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, when Bloomberg did that, big 5,000 Model 3 owner like customer satisfaction survey, essentially. And Brett ran some numbers on that and basically found that the Model 3 had a net promoter score. I forget the exact number, but it was something like a 97, which is just like outrageous, off the charts high, higher than like significantly higher than the iPhone back in the 07. And so I kept thinking about that over the years. And I was like, okay, if that's true, then like demand should be, not infinite, but like drastically higher than what Tesla's able to produce. So in an environment when Tesla's production has been, like essentially doubling, the demand has more than doubled because lead times are stretching out. So I think that could be a pretty significant factor. I mean, just anecdotally, a lot of, family members and friends that I have, who are, clearly not like a Tesla nut like you and I are, but they're starting to come around. And like I gave my brother a test drive, and he actually was going to order a different car, and then he drove my car. He's like, oh my gosh, I've got to have this. So he put down an order for a Model 3. And so I think you might have this organic demand just as, Tesla sells more cars and then awareness grows. I think we still are in kind of the early days of awareness of the company, if you look at kind of like broader populations. So I do think that dynamic, if that's what's driving demand on top of maybe some other macro things, that bodes really well for the sustainability of demand to kind of continue to outstrip production, even if production is ramping like crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think regarding EV tax credit, what are your thoughts? Do you think there will be an EV tax credit in 2022? Also for Tesla, does it matter either way whether there is a EV tax credit or not?
I don't know. I did think for sure there was going to be, but I think it's very unclear now. Whether it would be in some sort of standalone bill or If some new version of the Build Back Better, plan does get introduced, I think the EV tax credit would be a prime candidate for inclusion in there. But I wouldn't know how to kind of peg the odds of it. Washington's a little bit of an enigma to me. In terms of whether Tesla needs it or not, I mean, clearly they don't need it. I think if that were to come through, how I would think about it is giving them kind of more staying pressure on their pricing and on their margins. So, you could imagine if that came through, then Tesla could probably raise prices, I don't know, another $4,000 or something like that. And still have, 6 months plus of demand. I don't know. I'm a little bit torn on that one. Like as a Tesla investor, I'd love to see that happen, but I'm not sure that we need, more spending at the federal government level on this sort of thing.
Yeah, I hear you. Because I agree. I mean, if there's an EV tax credit, Tesla probably will have to raise prices just to keep, lead times reasonable. But if they raise it $4,000 or $5,000, that's like, what's gonna happen to gross margin? It's like that's like straight bottom line. Like, it's like gross margins in the 40s, 40% or higher. And it's like, what the heck? Is this ridiculous?
I heard the interview you did with James Stevenson, and he was talking about the possibility of if they, imagine they've got 12-month, lead times or whatever, just way more demand than they can handle. It would make sense for them to prioritize deliveries based on who's opting for full self-driving.
Exactly,
That would just be like the prudent thing to do. And so then if you start thinking, okay, add on like $4,000 or $5,000 purchase price and, an extra $10,000 of pure margin, revenue from full self-driving, it's just like you get to, really crazy margins. And like,
Exactly.
I haven't run the math, but I'd imagine that's 40%, like
Well,
it's crazy to think of what that would look like.
yeah, I mean, people will sound, I mean, yeah, no, it could. Because like just raising the price 4,000 would, that's like probably 10% or so, right? Or close
Yeah,
to,
slightly less than that.
but then if you prioritize full self-driving, as well, and that boosts up, it's crazy, man. Yeah, this is yeah, definitely interesting. For 2022, do you have a kind of a just your own personal type of course, none of this is financial advice, it's just our personal opinions, but what's your kind of price range for a Tesla? That you can expect, or just that you personally kind of foresee.
Yeah, so clearly not financial advice. And I would say before the delivery report came out, I was thinking maybe there's a chance like it could hit 1500 by the end of the year or something like that. It was a little bit concerned about macro, but Em and I have been talking a lot about this lately, and it seems very clear to us that like the operations of the company are gonna backstop some level of the share price. But after this production and delivery report came in, it's like, okay, now, you have to assume higher deliveries than you were before, just because the run rate in December is like insane of what they were producing both out of Fremont and Shanghai. And then, so if you just extrapolate that for 12 months and then add in some amount of production out of Berlin and Austin, it's just kind of crazy. So, I was doing that and trying to come up with I think the easiest way for me to think about the share price is to model out earnings per share, adjusted earnings per share, and then take some sort of multiple on that. And so I had been kind of assuming earnings per share for 2022 in like the $12 range. But after going through and adjusting, I coming up with like reasonable EPS estimates of like 15 to 17, bull case up to like $20 per share. And so then if you think 1 year from now and apply like a trailing PE multiple on that of 100, which is conservative, I think, for a trailing multiple, then that's like 15 to two 1500 to $2,000 per share. And if there's potentially room north of there, I think, but that would be my like reasonable, if they're able to perform at the margins that I'm expecting and that sort of thing. So I don't know. It's I mean, this is why I told you in the DMs that those implications are nuts. Start like it's easy to just say, oh wow, that was a good beat. Like the stock should move 5% or something. But then when you start going through the detailed analysis of, what are the actual implications, and if I carry this forward into 2022, what does that mean? That's when the implications start getting really nuts.
No, I hear you. It's another factor is which is interesting is once a company starts to outperform, let's say much higher than expectations, but let's say it continues, it actually has, it's not just the earnings that, let's say, affect the multiple. It's also it's actually the multiple itself, right? That can grow or be higher than it would have usually normally have been. And so there's like this compounding effect of what a company that's really outperforming, what their valuation can end up with. So it's almost like, it can get pretty crazy maybe.
Yeah. Like if your PEG ratio is the methodology that you use to value a stock and they outperform on the earnings piece of it, and then now it's clear that they have higher growth potential. It's like you've got to advantageously move both sides of that equation, so you have like this multiplicative effect of just compounding implications to your valuation. It's kind of crazy. I'm curious though, what are your thoughts? I know you've been talking to a lot of people out there and running your own numbers. I mean, do you have an expectation on price range, or you've been running through similar sort of exercise? And
I'm kind of on the more like, I feel like I don't have a need to have these pushing the bullish type of estimates. I kind of, want to be somewhat conservative, but that said, I've had to boost all of my 2022 estimates because I was originally at 270 deliveries at the beginning of the quarter, and I had to go to 285, and now it's like almost 310. And it's actually it's like super shocking to me. In Tesla's history, I don't know if there's been like that many points where they've really just like almost, changed the trajectory of, where they're headed.
Yeah.
And this quarter, it just seems like, this was a big delivery number. And I don't think people are going to fully understand it until earnings, it's printed, the numbers are printed, right, and they're like, what the heck? What's this? But what's crazy is if you really extrapolate it out a bit, like you start to adjust the numbers to 2022, 2023, it kind of gets ridiculous where you're like, is this really going to happen? Right. You start to have your own question marks.
It's nuts. I mean, I was over $6 per share for, Q4 of 22. And so then I'm thinking, okay, well then if you're using that as a baseline and you want to use a forward multiple, for 2023 earnings, then like you get even more crazy, share price.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
exactly
like, I am trying to temper expectations as well. But like the strange thing to me is that like they're doing this on the back of manufacturing.
Yeah.
And like, so I'm not even giving significant credit here. I'm giving a little bit of credit, but not significant credit to like full self-driving taking off and like that take rate really exploding and that sort of thing, which is a real possibility, I think. And that is like just another layer of insanity that you could add on top of these numbers.
Yeah. Okay. So I jotted down some of your Q4 2022 numbers, because I think that's kind of a great way to help people understand what you mean by the implications being kind of nuts, and so I want to kind of just go over this briefly. So in terms of delivery numbers, it seems like you're targeting about 1.8 million deliveries. That's a bit higher than maybe I'm expecting, but the quarterly numbers work out to be 335,000 in Q1, 395 in Q2, 490 in Q3, and then in Q4, 608. So when you look at 608,000, it seems kind of high, but can you share kind of a breakdown? Like when I look at it, I go, okay, maybe you're expecting, let's say 130, 140 out of 1,000 out of Fremont, maybe 300 out of Shanghai, 100, 100 or so out of, or 90, 90 out of Austin, Berlin. Like what's your kind of, breakdown on how can we get 600,000 deliveries in Q4 next year?
So,
or this year, actually. Yeah, it's already 2022.
Yeah, that is crazy that it's this year. Yeah. I would first point out, I don't claim to be a delivery expert. I used to spend a lot more time than I do now trying to get those numbers right. And it was, I realized Troy Tesla like does a lot better job than I ever will on it. So I'm more than willing to give up ground and say that that might be wrong. You know, what I like to do is really just, you know, run sensitivities on that. So I might say, all right, what does the earnings per share look like at 608? And then maybe 5, you know, 50 is a better number, something like that. And you know, the end result isn't that much drastically different, in my mind. But you know, basically, I'm assuming like Fremont and Shanghai continue to ramp, which I think is something that a lot of people didn't necessarily give credit to Fremont for the ability to ramp to the extent that it has. I don't have an exact breakout of, you know, like Berlin and Shanghai ramping, or sorry, Berlin and Austin ramping, but Austin in particular, I think is has a high probability of being a bit of a dark horse and being able to produce, you know, more than people are expecting, especially since they're starting with Model Y. I mean, that's they've got a lot of experience producing that right now, and so I think they're the ramp on that product in particular out of Austin is going to be pretty quick. But like I said, I could be wrong on that.
Got it. Okay, so let's say hypothetically we go with the 600,000 in a quarter. I mean, it could be Q4, but that's the thing with Tesla. If they're executing well, it could just, you know, maybe it's extended out a quarter, you know, or two. Eventually they get there, right? I mean, the numbers are
It's
going to be relatively
moving
similar.
around, you know, plus or minus 3 months, 6 months. It doesn't
Exactly.
really matter. It's within, you know, a short to medium term.
Yeah. So let's say we have you have 35 billion in revenue. And I mean, for people, you could generally say, okay, let's say, you know, you sell 600,000 cars, ASP, maybe 50,000, that's 30 billion. Roughly. Sure, ASP might be a little lower for some cars, but you know, and then add 5 billion for other revenue. So that's 35 billion. Let's take you have gross margins overall at 29%. So that's $10 billion in gross profit. And then you have 3
Yeah,
billion of,
and if I could just stop
okay.
there for a second, like that's I try, like I was saying, not to be super aggressive. So I actually have like the core manufacturing gross margin where, you know, like I back out full self-driving and credits, and I do that every quarter to try to get an accurate representation of their manufacturing like prowess. And so I to get those gross margin numbers that you just said, you know, I actually have that number decreasing relative to what we saw in Q3 of last, or you know, this past quarter. So I'm assuming a decent amount of struggle to ramp these new factories profitably, which I think is a potentially conservative assumption given some of the pricing tailwinds that we've talked about here. So
And then you have so 10 billion,
yep.
10 billion gross profit, 3 billion OpEx, and then so you have 7 billion before taxes. GAAP, you have 5.6, non-GAAP at 7 billion. So if you think about it, $7 billion in one quarter of non-GAAP earnings, annualized, that's $28 billion annualized. If we do a 50 multiple off of that, that's basically 1.4 trillion. 100 multiple off of that is 2.8 trillion market cap. Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, who knows about the multiple, and you know, a lot of it is sentiment, the market conditions, et cetera. But that said, 28 billion annualized, you know, income, that's pretty crazy. Yeah.
I didn't think we'd get here this fast without assuming like some breakthrough on full self-driving. So the fact that that's even possible, like, you know, I don't think that's an overly optimistic case. I don't think it's an overly pessimistic case. In fact, it's maybe slightly optimistic on Q4 of this year, like you were, but maybe Q1. It doesn't really matter for all intents and purposes. It's just it's unheard of. And so, like, yeah, this is why, like, I think Tesla has the potential, like Emmett says all the time, of being the stock of all time. I mean, to do that on the back of, you know, 600,000 vehicles, and then to think about them ramping that to, you know, 5 million per quarter down the road. You know, granted, that'll be a slightly lower as ASPs, but by that time, who knows, you know, where full self-driving is and robotaxis and Tesla bots and all that. So it's like it's kind of crazy to think that we could have another huge run-up in the share price on the back of what we've seen the last 2 years. But when you start looking forward in the next 2 years, you say, okay, well, how do we not move up at least slightly? And then you can also see the possibility for like a really drastic run-up within that time frame, depending on how they execute.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at last quarter's non-GAAP, I think it was 2.1 billion or so. annualized, that's like a little over $8 billion. But then if you could just fast forward 5 quarters to Q4 of 2022, it's possible $28 billion annualized non-GAAP income. That's like 3x, right? You're 3xing, you know, your income. It's like ridiculous. I mean, but I think this also highlights something that, you know, I've been saying for a while is this whole misunderstood or underappreciated aspect of Tesla's operating leverage, where this, like, you know, if when you ramp the revenue, like your profits are gonna just really grow fast because, you know, the like first off, your operating expenses don't increase that much, you know, comparatively to the overall revenue increase. And then a lot of your, I mean, the business model in itself, it's a lot of the fixed costs already, they're just all, you know, already incorporating the gross margin, gross profit number. So that is just, it's a perfect ramping machine, you know. It's just ridiculous. And that's how, you know, they're able to do like a 3x in profits, right? Just within, let's say, 5 quarters or so.
Yeah, that again has surprised me though. Like, you know, I always believed in their operating leverage, but I didn't think it would, like, they'd be able to control costs this much. You know, I was kind of thinking in my mind, all right, if you double your deliveries, then you're gonna have to, I don't know, maybe go up 70% or something like that on your, like, operating expenses, because you're gonna need to hire, like, new technicians, and you're gonna need to build out new superchargers and that sort of thing. But, like, they've kept such a tight lid on their operating expenses. It's a huge amount of credit to Zach and to Elon for, like, the way that they've controlled those, because it's been, like, astonishing, like, how they've been able to grow top line while maintaining, you know, pretty strict growth on their O&M.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked about that too. I mean, just like just how OpEx is just not growing that much. Like if you go back even to pre-Model 3 ramp days, it's like and compared to now, it's like it hasn't grown, you know, like much at all. It's like crazy.
And look at what they're doing with that. Like, they're building out a world-class, like, real-world AI team. They're developing their own, like, supercomputers.
And
They're
batteries,
developing their own chips. Yeah, like, the R&D that they're doing for, what is it, like, $10 billion a year or something, like, I forget the exact number, but it's amazing how efficient they're being with their operating expenses and their R&D. It's just nuts. Like, it shouldn't be possible, but they're doing it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this is a fantastic. Oh, last question. Do you expect a stock split this year?
I guess I do. I try to be agnostic about it. Like, I think there would almost certainly be, you know, like, a good, it would be good for the stock in the short term. But in the, you know, medium to long term, it, like, the results of that will kind of get washed out. So, I mean, I think just with where the stock is trading, you know, I think Elon probably thinks about it from the perspective of, like, the employees probably more than anyone. So, you know, if you want to be, like, buying stock and everything like that, it's probably easier to do if the share price is, I don't know, $50 or something, rather than, you know, 1100. So, I don't know. I think it seems like it would be the right time to do it this year, but I'm trying not to read into it too much also.
Oh, actually, we had a few Twitter questions. I asked people what they're interested in. There are actually several questions, like how is it working with Emmett? Like, what's one thing that you've taken from him or you've learned from him, you think?
So, I'm very much, like, a numbers-oriented guy. Like, I've been a fan enough of Tesla and Elon for a long enough time to kind of understand how important he is to the organization. But when we're looking at other companies, you know, I think I have a tendency to, like, say, "Oh, look, they've got great cash flow generation, or they've got, you know, really strong revenue growth." And Emmett does a really great job at, like, refocusing me on, like, how's the founder? You know, who is, you know, that guy? And are they an impressive person that we want to kind of, you know, bet on the jockey? Whereas I'm always focused on, like, the horse, I think, a little bit.
Got
So
it.
that's been really helpful for me. But he's, like, very laid back. I mean, I think how he comes across on your channel is just who he really is. You know, like, even though we're dealing with you know, a fairly stressful job of managing, you know, people's money, he's very relaxed about it, and is just has conviction, I think, in what we're doing, and that makes it easy and a pleasure to work with him, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. I've hung out with him quite a few times, and I remember at one Tesla event, I think it was a Model X reveal, like Elon was like really, really late. It was like over an hour, I think. It was just like, and I was just like dying. I was like, I can't handle
Yeah.
this. The room was
Yeah.
packed over stuff. I was like, but Emma's just like, just chill,
Yeah.
just chatting away. Definitely. Actually, one more Twitter question is, what's the, actually, I don't know if it's a Twitter thing, but people are asking about your six kids. What's the best thing you think about having six kids? They're pretty young too, right? In ages?
Yeah,
Yeah.
so my oldest is nine,
Okay.
and we have a 1-year-old, and we're expecting number
Wow.
six in March. So
Awesome.
yeah, we've packed in a lot of activity into 10 years. So like it's clearly a lot of work. There's no getting around that. You lack of sleep and all that. Like we actually were just exposed to COVID over New Year's. So my 6-year-old was up in the middle of the night sick, and we're all kind of waiting for the shoe to fall with the rest of us. Like they're just so much fun, and seeing their minds form is just like an absolute pleasure. Like it's a huge responsibility, but it's also so much fun to kind of form them and work on their relationships with each other. It's I'm doing a terrible job of explaining it, but it's just like you really can't put into words what it's like to see, my oldest. I just remember how overwhelming that was when she was a newborn, and now to like watch this growth and this development and all these inter-family dynamics, where they each have relationships with each other. It's just been a joy. But my wife homeschools them too, and so the aspect of it that I really enjoyed is, really working on their critical thinking. Like, how do you think through a problem? That's something that I'm very much invested in, I think, just in general for, the world and for the country. I don't know if I'm imagining it, but it seems like there's not enough people kind of reasoning from first principles and understanding how to think through problems and come to their own conclusions logically. So that's been really fun to kind of be involved in their schooling in that regard as well.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, and like all day, I'm literally like, whenever I see them, I'm just like, I'm in shock of how amazing, they are, and how just the process of developing the relationships that they have together with us. And I'm just like, I'm just blown away. It's just the most amazing experience personally. I've never imagined that, yeah, having kids could be just such a crazy, awesome experience. But yeah, definitely echoing
Yeah,
you.
my daughter for Christmas gave me a poem that she made. She like, drew it out and like wrote these, and it was like a actually very impressive poem. And I was like, I couldn't believe that like my 9-year-old daughter had this, creative capacity to come up with something completely on her own and give it to me. It was just like, it's just so heartwarming, and there's nothing else like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I have so many stories like that too. Matt, thank you for extending your time and your knowledge to me and everyone on my channel. I appreciate it. I'll go ahead and link to your Twitter profile in the video description to Good Soil Management as well. You guys have a weekly live stream on your guys' YouTube channel. I'll link to that as well. Yeah, you guys are doing fantastic stuff. It's always fun, talking with you and also Emmett. So yeah, have a great
Yeah,
year.
thanks for having me on, Dave. It was great.
All right, I'll see you. Bye.